Welcome to episode 10 of the Hard Questions Only podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Edgman. I'm on my own for this one, and this one will probably be on the shorter side. I just wanted to talk about HR 127 a little bit, what it is, what it means, maybe some implications and some intended or unintended consequences of proposing this. So if you're not familiar with HR 127, this is a piece of legislation that was introduced by a Democratic representative from Texas by the name of Sheila Jackson Lee, and it puts a whole lot of stipulation on the purchasing and ownership of guns, gun accessories, and ammunition for said guns. So it's got restrictions across the board, which include banning the online sale of firearms, accessories, and ammunition. It would require psychological testing to purchase a firearm. It doesn't make any kind of specifics about who's going to perform that testing to any reasonable degree of explanation or what it means to pass. It would require a federal database with names, addresses, serial numbers of guns. It would require you to notify the state if you want to sell your firearm, and you would only be able to legally sell it to someone else if that other person also had a federal permit. It would require registration to buy ammunition. It would ban military-style weaponry, which it does make an attempt to define, albeit very poorly. Firearm licenses would cost $800. Among other things, it would ban AR-15s, and it would also require liability insurance in case you accidentally wound or kill someone, I guess. So there's definitely a whole lot going on in this legislation. And there's no science in it. There's no justification stated within. It's literally just essentially a list of proposed rules. There's no, we want to do this because of X, Y, and Z. There's no science cited. There's no data cited. It's literally just a list of bullet points of things this woman would like to do. This was one person's personal opinion on how 350 million people should live in a very, and arguably the most serious context, which is people's right to protect their bodily sovereignty, including, you know, up to and including their personal safety. And the opportunity for people to have this kind of power over arguably those they despise, private gun ownership don't even pretend to act like they care about conservatives or Republicans. So this opportunity should never really exist even to begin with, to be able to lord over people you despise and to be lorded over by people whom you despise. But that's kind of a whole conversation for another day. This trended for like 2 days on Twitter. People got all hot and heavy about it, and then it, you know, floated back under, you know, the current with the 24-hour news cycle like things like to do. It's currently still at committee. I'm not sure how long these things usually stay at committee before they go to the floor for votes and things like this. Will it pass? Probably not, even though obviously both houses are controlled by the Democrats. There's plenty, or I like to think there's plenty of reasonable Democrats who think, one, this is absurd, and two, it's unconstitutional, which some parts of it absolutely are. But at the end of the day, it's still a dangerous and frankly kind of disgusting suggestion that you would, if you want to boil it down, you people who are in favor of this bill are advocating for the drastic reduction of the ability for me to effectively protect myself. When you ask someone who is opposed to private gun ownership, how you're supposed to effectively protect yourself against someone with a gun, they always have some fucking bullshit like run away or call the cops. Well, running away isn't always an option if I'm trapped in my home and I wake up to someone breaking into my house for whatever reason. And two, as evidenced by the Supreme Court and their decision in Warren versus the District of Columbia, law enforcement has no legal obligation to help you or protect you. So if for whatever reason they don't show up, you have no legal recourse. And you can't fucking seek legal recourse if you're dead. If it passes, it's got some pretty obvious implications. Namely, a lot of people will become felons overnight. And secondly, criminals will still have guns. And now the disparity between what criminals can get their hands on and what law-abiding citizens get their hands on will be even greater. And the people who are ostensibly for this bill, or who will be when it comes time to vote, are the same people who hated the cops and shouted "all cops are bastards" until January 6th, and are also probably the same people who hated the military-industrial complex and all of that business again until January 6th happened. Suddenly they loved cops and they loved the militarized state and militarized police departments. So there's a lot of hypocrisy there, but none of it is surprising, at least to me. And a more sinister realization is the fact that there are plenty of people who will eagerly vote for this without any shame or second thought. But what they really want is to outright ban the private ownership of firearms and effective tools to protect ourselves against those who would wish harm upon us. But they will settle for this knowing that they can't really get outright bans wholesale. So those people, I'm not even willing to have a conversation with those people. Those people... How I feel about those people is the same way far leftists, extreme leftists, and fascists, anti-fascists feel about Trump and Trump supporters, which is that they aren't even deserving of a conversation because it's an inconsolable situation and they don't deserve someone's time and effort because the conversation won't happen in good faith and they're just disgusting people. Taking away someone's right to effectively protect themselves against someone who would wish them harm is fundamentally no less horrific than violating someone's bodily sovereignty. Arguments for gun control never really hold water and always become appeals to emotion when you talk about school shootings and violence in inner cities and gang-related violence. It's always what it devolves to. And frankly, I don't care one way or another about what kind of reasoning or excuses there are for advocating for this type of legislation or introducing it. That good faith conversation will never happen because far left individuals and staunch Democrats will almost never agree that the problem lies anywhere other than the physical ownership of a firearm. No one's ever willing to discuss whether or not it's a mental health crisis, whether or not it's a prescription medication crisis, or anything else. Household violence crisis. That never comes up. The immediate solution, or any type of solution, whether it's immediate or long term, is always the banning of the tool used to commit the violence, and it's never the cause of the violence to begin with, or whatever it is that leads someone to cause violence, and they just happen to utilize a firearm. For me personally, it feels important to be conscious of the hill I'm willing to metaphorically die on. And for me, this is that hill, is Second Amendment rights, which are fundamentally the right to effectively protect yourself and your family against those who would wish to do harm against you. I put my money where my mouth is in various ways, primarily by living in places which are Second Amendment friendly. And this is why I will never live outside of the South. You know, in 4 or 5 years, my wife and I will be again in a position where it's time to move due to her career choice. And she asks me from time to time, you know, in case my opinion ever changes, where I'm willing to live. And my answer has always been and will continue to be anywhere she wants to live, except states which have very strict gun laws, namely California and New York. I would live just about in any other state. Again, unless that state has similarly strict laws. I don't know all of them off the top of my head. Generally speaking, northern states, with one or two exceptions, are more strict than southern states. So I have no interest in living in any place which has no problem making me defenseless against violent and ill-intentioned people. But at the end of the day, rights are just the thing someone's willing to fight for and defend. And laws are only things which the state is successful in enforcing. If a law is never enforced, then it's not truly a law. And if a right is always infringed upon, then it's not a right. And this seems important, especially when people talk about the Constitution, you know, in finality, and say, well, this is unconstitutional, that's unconstitutional, this is unlawful, this isn't right, especially in the context of lockdowns and closing people's businesses. Well, fundamentally, it does not matter. It might matter in a court of law, but morally, ethically, it doesn't matter whether or not something is unconstitutional. If the state is willing to put its boot on it, and no one is in a position to or willing to resist that boot. It ends the same way, whether it's constitutional and it gets trampled upon or it was never constitutional to begin with. It has the same end result, so it doesn't matter what you call it. The Constitution is not self-enforcing or self-preserving. And I think people like to forget that. It's a list of tenets that have to be defended. Otherwise, they're just, I don't know, history, I guess. And I saw some tidbits here and there across Twitter and elsewhere about Biden considering the usage of executive orders to tighten up on some gun regulation in some capacity, which I guess he would legally be able to do in the form of regulation or some things like that. But I don't think that will stand. I think people are in a position, not only Republicans and Trump supporters, which have a bad taste in their mouth from all of these executive orders and kind of like the tone that sets, that, you know, the implication that perhaps Biden is above the law and above the legislative process, and he can just say things and they get done, which again, if Biden says something and then it gets enforced, well, guess what? That's a law now. It doesn't matter if it went through Congress and Pelosi and Schumer and old turtle boy Mitch McConnell talk about it or don't. It's a law if it gets enforced. That's it. That's the brass tacks of it. But I don't think Biden would be successful in enforcing any type of gun control that is enacted via executive order. No one is going to adhere to that. And of course, the introduction of this H.R. 127 had some consequences that are arguably the opposite. Or inarguably the opposite of what this representative intended, but it might also have not even been on her radar for consideration, which is the fact that, as this usually goes, when people talk about tightening of gun laws and all this type of stuff, whether the legislation is about to be introduced or people are talking about introducing it or it's going up for a vote, the one thing that always happens is people buy more guns. They buy more ammunition. They buy more parts, and now they buy 3D printers to print their own fucking guns. So you want to talk about legislation that will ban a lot of guns and a lot of different people from owning said guns. People are just going to go out and buy them, and right now there's no federal database. So you have no way of knowing who bought guns in the time between they talked about that legislation and it may or may not being passed. So that's the whole issue with another thing that people don't really talk about is even if you were to ban guns overnight, there's no database, there's no Excel spreadsheet of everyone in America who owns a gun. That's not a thing that exists. The ATF has a database of people who own suppressors and fully automatic machine guns, because in some instances you can't own those as a private citizen. It's a lot of bureaucracy and red tape to jump through, but you can. It's very expensive. It's very cost prohibitive. But there are lists for those things. But for the probably half a billion to over a billion guns in America, yeah, there's no list that all of those are on. So what's the federal government going to do? Knock door to door? Make probabilistic arguments? Go into the South and say, hey, we're going to set up roadblocks and we're going to check your car and your person? That will never, ever happen. Which makes all of it just look like a bit of a virtue signal. In which case, it's a waste of time and a waste of my tax money that goes to pay these people too much money to begin with. And the cycle just goes around and around and again, just forever down the fucking toilet. But what's new? So, I guess this turned into a little bit of a venting session more than anything, but it's something that I've been thinking a lot about, again, as my, you know, personal hill that I'm metaphorically willing to die on. It means a lot to me. You know, perhaps I'm biased. I grew up in the South. I grew up around firearms, respecting them heavily, using them as tools to get food and using them for fun with target practice, understanding how they work, maintaining them, fixing them, putting them together, seeing them precisely for what they are, which is dangerous but very useful tools. And, you know, that probably has a lot of impact on my current opinion about guns and firearms. You know, I currently own a firearm, and I've owned one for most of my adult life in some form or another. But gun control arguments, they don't hold a lot of water unless you're making an appeal to emotion, which inarguably can be very effective. That's why people use it. But this is why you never see, like, Calion Noir being invited to publicly debate liberals about gun laws, because it never ends well for people who are on the anti-gun side. Never ends well. Which is good, right? Because if it was more compelling in some way, either, you know, misleading or in bad faith or what have you, then yeah, we would probably see more anti-gun legislation. But as of right now, it's very hard to argue against. So there is some hope in that. But it's all supremely irritating to me. I let a lot of stuff wash over my back that gets talked about, you know, like critical race theory, transgender issues, equality, equity, the race-related stuff, identity politics in general. It doesn't really get under my skin. But the Second Amendment does, because I feel like without the Second Amendment, you have no First Amendment. You have no other amendment either. You're not in a position to defend and fight for those other amendments. So, I think that's all I have today. It's a beautiful Saturday. The birds are literally singing outside the window. I think I'm gonna hang up the microphone and go have a nice glass of bourbon, make some art. It's a great weekend to make some art and enjoy the rest of the day. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.